Hey, what up? Welcome in. Doug Gottlieb here. This is the All Ball Podcast. Quick note, we're not putting trade deadline stuff on this podcast because this discussion with Rajah Bell is just too good. If you want the more up-to-date, hey, this trade, what do I think of Clint Capella being sent out of Houston? Actually, I kind of want to say something that I just think it's a mistake. You do need a role man. You do need a rim runner. You do need rim protection. You may not want to close with it, but you need it as part of your bag. I think it's been a mistake, but they had overpaid him, and so I know there's other ramifications. That kind of stuff you can get on the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast, which drops daily. This is a great discussion with Rajah Bell about Kobe Bryant, what he learned, how they became friends, the breaking of the ice, and where he was when he found out about Kobe's death, and how his own kids, his own mom, reacted to it. It's great stuff. Without further ado, here's part two of All Ball with Rajah Bell.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Okay, so what was his rep in the league? What did people say about Shaq, about Kobe?
Yeah, I think most people did not like Kobe. And I don't, because, well, first of all, I shouldn't say most people. Most of the stars that Kobe probably let into his circle probably liked him. I was not one of them. So I was just someone that had to compete against him. Anyone who only knew him as the competitor, mm-hmm. you probably didn't like him because he was really good. He was unapologetic about being really good. Nothing that you ever did really got to him because there was very little, like, trash talk between he and I. And you know, like, sometimes there's satisfaction in just being able to get a guy to say some stupid shit to you. Like, I'm under your skin a little bit. But he gave you none of that. So I think it's safe to say that most guys on the teams, at least that I was on during the time, they didn't really love Kobe that much. But, you know, in fairness, you know, he wasn't letting a lot of people in at that point. He didn't let anybody in.
Like, listen, I don't even think it's stars. I don't think anybody knew him. Remember, like, he lives by me now. Like, he moved down to Newport Beach, Newport Coast, which is even further than Newport Beach. Like, he was aloof by his right. own estimation. Like, that wasn't how he got down. Like, he did kind of his own thing. So I don't, and by the way, and most people listen to this, know we're not crushing the dude. Like, part of, I believe, you know, did you watch last Friday night it was basically became a memorial before the game?
Yeah, I did. It was fantastic.
It was fantastic. It was hard. I mean, I was bawling my eyes out in my Miami hotel room. I had to go up there. I couldn't. But I think I thought that using his own voice was not only from Dear Basketball was not only powerful, but also if you listened, it told the story of Kobe in that when he first came to the league, he wanted to be Michael Jordan. He talked like Mike. He walked like Mike. He tried to play like Mike. He chewed gum like Mike, right? He's trying to copy his idol, which, hell, anybody tried to do that, right? And then there was this time in which, and this was about when you kind of ran into him where he was feeling himself, but kind of trying to be hood, trying to kind of figure out who he was. And, right. and like, again, if you listen close enough during that ceremony, you heard his voice. And it kind of chinked. It was like, wait, is he doing a Michael Jordan impression? And then all of a sudden he's like, wait, is he trying to be a hood? And then like the later stage, the 24, even late in his, he started to just be Kobe. And then as he finished up and then, you know, when he gets his number retired, like now he's this like regal gentleman and you're like, he's brilliant. Like, no, he like figured it out. He grew up.
Yeah.
And here's the parallel to me. Like, I'm a Jewish kid from Orange County. I remember I told my son this the other night. Like, hey, when I was like 12 or 13, 14, like, I tried to talk like I was black. You know, I listened to hip hop music because I thought, like, well, that's what basketball players do, right? You try and you be a chameleon. And then you go through a process of kind of figuring yourself out. And I remember by the time, like, I was in college, I figured out that, like, black people don't like you because you're trying to be yourself. People like you if you just be yourself, even if you're a super sports dork, you know, just be yep. yourself and your friends will be your friends and the people that don't like you won't be. And I think that's what Kobe figured out. And I appreciate what you're saying because He wasn't a warm dude. He wasn't teaching other players. He wasn't letting people in. You know, he was, I'm sure he was insecure. I'm sure he was conflicted. He had, you know, he was going through life changes. You're playing with adults. You're in LA, but you're in Orange County. And what you're saying is accurate, what everybody has told me. Like, Desmond Mason told me that, like, late in his career, right, late in Desmond's career, and late in Kobe's career, like, all of a sudden, Kobe's, like, texts him, yo, D, are you going to be at All-Star Weekend? And Desmond's like, who is this? He's like, Kobe.
You're like, what?
He's like, we're not, like, friends. And then all of a sudden, like, he wanted to be boys. It was like he all of a sudden decided, like, you know what? Like, this trying to do it by myself thing sucks. I'm going to try and be one of the guys.
Yeah, he was really abrupt like that, too. Like, so it's not surprising. Like, I tell a story. So I don't even know. I should let you take me where you want to go. But let me.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so after what happens in Phoenix, you know, there was, look, at that time, I hated Kobe. Like, that shit wasn't made for TV. Like, if we had seen each other, I would have tried to fight him. Like, and so.
Why? What did he do? You talk about Phoenix, okay?
Yeah.
What did he do specifically?
Well, look, specifically in that, within the elbow, you know, the triangle offense, there's an elbow catch for some blind pig action that you get into, right?
Yep.
And they had figured out that was the one place I couldn't deny him, because if I overplayed the elbow, he spun out and he was at the rim for a lob. There's no help back there. So I almost have to concede that catch, but I'm trying to three-quarter him to make it as hard a catch as I can. But Kobe's now figured out that while I'm leaning on him like that, I'm an easy target for a little subtle elbow to the chin because they can't really see that. So he's just, you know, he's within the game. He's shooting it at my, you know, he's hitting me in the face with the elbow. So I've asked the refs a few times to clean it up. They refused to do it. So I'm like, okay. And I said to him at one point, like, if you don't clean it up, I'll take care of it. And so I finally do what I do. I bug out, like, by my own admission. I just completely, like, bugged out and did what I did. But it was the post incident that really, like, I've never said this before, but I'm going to share it with you, Doug. I thought, if you watch the video, and I thought to the question that you just asked me about Kobe and was he liked, if you watch it, right, I bug out and lose my mind and I clothesline him. If you do that to Steph Curry or any like player that's a star, Giannis, like, what do you think his teammates' reaction is going to be to
that? They're going to want to fight. By the way, I'm watching it right now. It's game five. You guys are up 93-79. He goes by you, and you close. And they come and help him up. They come and help him up, but nobody comes and does anything to you. If you do that to Steph, you do that to Steph Curry, Draymond Green's coming for your ass.
Correct. I thought, and I've never really articulated it. But you just asked me a question about how liked was he. I said, well, think about that. Like that, like no one had his back like that in that moment, which was, for me, it was kind of like, you know, I felt a little bad about that. Do you know what I mean? I'm like, man, that's gotta fucking suck.
Here's the part. Let me back you up on that. Okay. Your son's team in 2006, was that the team that lost to the Spurs?
Seven, maybe. Spurs. Yeah.
Okay. But why did you lose to the Spurs?
Because fucking Steve Nash got checked by Robert Horry, and I ran over there, and Brian Grant ran over there, and we tried to fight him.
No, but who hopped off of the bench and got suspended?
Yeah, like the bench is Boris Diaw and Amar'e Stoudemire.
Correct. That was the story. The story, yeah. And you, again, you lived it, so you tell me if I'm wrong. The very next year, Steve Nash, two-time league MVP, okay, gets checked. Game's over. You're going to win. You won in San Antonio to take back home court advantage, right?
Yeah.
And I think it was game five, or maybe it was game six. I don't remember. But it must have been game five. I'll have to look. You lived it. You would know. But the next game,
yeah,
those guys were suspended, and the Spurs came in and beat you because you didn't have like the best big guy in the league, Amar'e Stoudemire, best pick and roll big guy in the league, right? Which only backs up your point, which is all he did was get checked into the boards. You clothesline Kobe, and nobody did anything to you. Nobody did anything to you. So it's not like you guys were the only ones that didn't like him. His own teammates were like, "Yeah, fuck that guy," right?
Well, it certainly appeared that way. Like in the moment, it didn't. It didn't strike me. But when I watched the film, I was like, wow, no one really had his back on that. Which again, had to be a lonely kind of fucking feeling. But I think he embraced that. And so let me take it a step further, Doug. So like this is how abrupt he is. Like we the next time I see you, right, obviously after what's transpired, like, and that series plays itself out. And then, every time I see you after that, now I got to be on, like, I'm on alert. Like, because where I'm from, like, look, that shit, you might want to fight me every time I see you. I don't know.
Yes.
So
yes.
I got to be, I got to be ready to go just in case you want to go. So, I'm always on edge when I see him after that. So that the next time we really cross paths, I'm walking out of the Staples Center that next year, and Kobe is ahead of me as you're walking out of the Lakers locker room is closer to the carport than the visitors locker room is. So he's got a head start on me as we're going to the same place. But I'm walking at a brisker pace because he's got his wife, he's got an older woman with her, I can't tell who she is, and he's got kids. And so I'm like, this is gonna be fucking uncomfortable, but fuck, I'm walking, so here we go. As I go by, he yells out my name. And again, I'm like, he don't want to do this shit with his fucking kids here, does he? But so I turn around like, what the fuck? And he's like, Raj, he's like, what's up, man? I want to introduce you to my wife. These are my daughters, and this is my mother-in-law. And I was, I've had weird encounters in my life, Doug, but this one was just fucking strange. I was like, well, what? And from then on, we were buddies. Like, it was just that abrupt. Like, it was matter of fact. Like, hey, man, meet these people. And, I was like, wow, it's different. But, yeah, man, I'm cool. Like, fuck yeah, it's Kobe. Let's go.
It's really amazing, And I told the story last week on the pod that I had he had an I Can't Breathe shirt on. And I tweeted something about it, because, everybody protected Kobe around here. So I thought having that shirt on was a little hypocritical, whatever, and I kind of made fun of it, whatever. And then it didn't go. I was working at CBS at the time. They freaked out because Twitter freaked out. Right. So I took it down. I texted him. Buecher got me his number. I texted him. I apologized. Anyway, like my first time I met him, I was like, hey, man, I just want to apologize about a tweet. He's like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, I don't care, And he would talk about hoop, and it was like, and it was something my dad would tell me, and I had trouble. It's like separating church and state, right? And you had that too, where like when we're on the court, you can be a complete prick, but off the court you can be a regular dude and not carry it over. And he could legitimately do that, right? He talked about it with me, like full scale psychological warfare. Like he'd do anything it took, say anything it took, act any way it took to win a game. But then off the court, then it's like, nah, that stuff's over. And I think the compartmentalization, I think guys compartmentalize better than women, but I also think that really bright people compartmentalize, and I think there's women that really compartmentalize very, very well. It's a different type of brain than everybody has, but he definitely had that, in which he could process different things and why they were happening, I mean, look, that's why you were in the NBA. You became a good enough offensive player, but you were my brother coached a guy named Jorge Gutierrez who bounced around, played a bunch in the NBA. And when Greg signed him, he's like, look, this guy's amazing. Every team we play against, somebody wants to fight him. Every fucking team we play against, somebody wants to fight him. He goes, it's the most beautiful thing. And usually it's the other team's best player and he's completely out of his game because all he wants to do is fight Jorge, And you kind of had that ability where, like, you could rattle people. And I don't know if you rattled him, but it's like a gift. And you didn't try and do it. It's just like, look, that's how I get to the league, is I got to find a way to stop a dude. And if it comes down to he wants to fight me, fine. That's the way it's got to go.
It was an irritant. Like, that's kind of what, like, look, people say, like, with the whole thing, like, no, I'm never stopping Kobe. No one ever stopped Kobe. Like, on my best day, I was hoping to like affect the field goal percentage and keep him off the free throw line and just challenge the fucking shot and hope that you weren't going to, how are you going to stop him? You could shoot it from any angle. Like, he had a counter for everything you did. But what I figured out with Kobe was, where I could get to him was not in, like, irritating him to the point where he lost his mind, but almost baiting him into trying to score 60 on me, if that makes sense. Like, if I could get him into
because then he would completely get out of – because the idea of the triangle is – you know, it's basically a spacing ISO-based offense, but if help comes, there's perfect spacing so that the next pass is wide open and very obvious, right?
So that's, if I that's could what, get him out of throwing that next pass, we had a better shot of winning than if he got the 38 and everybody else got 15. So I would almost be like, look, don't help. It's going to be a long night for me. Mike could be like, look, it's going to be a long night, but we're much better off if you can get him to try to score 50 on you tonight. And I'd be like, this is going to fucking suck, but okay. And we had very level success with it, but I'd be interested to know the numbers on the nights where he took a high volume of shots for them in games that I played against him. I always felt like that gave me the best shot. If I could keep him off the free throw line and have him shoot a high volume of shots, like it was the best I could do.
This is an aside, and maybe it's for another podcast, but there are always going to be people that question the validity of Steve Nash's MVP awards, right? To be like, well, he didn't guard, you know, they didn't win a championship. And my counter to that was, one, obviously that Spurs game in which you had two of your best players suspended completely changes that narrative. Two, you guys changed basketball the way you played. Sean Marion at the four, you know, and just the spacing and execution and offense. But more than anything, like, dude, everyone got paid because Steve Nash made everyone better. Like, it made everyone better. And it was also, he kind of came up a little bit different era where Steve Nash could really shoot, but just didn't all the time because that wasn't how you played, right? He just took what the defense gave you. You lived through the Steve Nash two-time MVP era, was he legitimately the best player in the league during those 2 years?
He was. So I get into this a lot, Doug. Are we talking about the best player or are we talking about, like, most valuable player? Because I would tell you that there wasn't a player with more value than Steve, because every single thing we did was predicated off of him making it work with his ability to play pick and roll, or, you know, to just generally get you the ball where you want it. Without that, none of that works. And so, yeah, I would say that Steve is deserving of those. I do think it's kind of laughable that Kobe only has, what is, one MVP? What did he? He got one MVP? Mm-hmm. Like, to have been as dominant as he was, I think he should have had more. But I don't know that I'd make the argument that he deserves one of the ones that Steve got. Because Steve was... Look, if Steve wanted to average 25 to 26 points a game with what we were doing, you don't think he would average 26 points a game? Like, he was the best shooter on our team. He was probably, I don't know, maybe third or fourth in 3-point attempts. I don't know what the numbers say, but the game wasn't played through the point guard position like that yet. And I've talked to Steve about this. And I've asked him. He was like, "Man, I wish, you know, if I had known, if I had known that this was an analytically you know, better way to play offensively, I would have shot the ball more. It would have been better for our team." And, like, you know, hindsight's 20/20. Like, but if he wanted to, he would have done that. He just didn't do it because he was so busy setting the table for the rest of us. And if you subtracted him from our equation, like, that doesn't work. If Mike doesn't have Steve, like, in those years, I mean, I don't know who else you would plug into that. Maybe he found a serviceable guy that could get some of what we got, but it wouldn't have been that, man. He was a magician in what we were doing offensively.
Okay, so you meet Kobe, his daughters, his wife, his mother-in-law. Did it immediately change? Did you guys become friends then, or did it take a while? Text buddies? Like, what happened after that meeting?
Yeah, so we became like, I don't know, I see you, we talk, like, you know, we're asking about kids now. So the next few games, it was like that. Like, you know, I got kids, like, I think the next year we played him in the playoffs, right? And so I had my first son the night before we played the Lakers at home. And so, you know, he's like, "Oh, yeah, man, I heard you, you know, you had your son last night." So we're friends like that. You know, when I got to Charlotte, it became like, "Hey, man, you want to go out to dinner? Like, you got a number, you know, numbers, and you know, I'll shoot him the random text, invite him to, like, you know, Thanksgiving and stuff like that. You never really accepted that invite, like when they'd be in town and stuff like that. But then we became, you know, we became guys where I'd reach out via text and he'd reach out via text. And, you know, we never became like besties like that. You know what I mean? But there was a, respect there. Like he came out 1 year and I remember in Utah, I was back in Utah. It was the first time we saw him and we were laughing before the game and talking shit. And he was telling me, "Hey man, I got something new for you, bro. I'm putting up 275 on the bench. I'm 4% body fat. Like you ain't seen nothing. Like you know, just kind of like, you know, buddies. Like we weren't ever gonna be like doing holidays together like Steve and I did, but we were cool, man. And I really appreciated the fact that a guy like that, just for me, this is a selfish thing, could appreciate the inner competitor in me enough to like. To be a friend, like to respect it enough. Because real talk, like who the fuck am I? Like it's Kobe fucking Bryant, and I pulled 210 days and lucked my way into the league, you know. So there was some satisfaction and some pride in the fact that man, I played this motherfucker hard enough, not successful enough, but hard enough, where he was like what he would think of me like that. And so, you know, before I went to Utah that year, I was a free agent. It was going to be the last time I was a free agent. And he called me. The Lakers called me at 12:01 that night. Kobe did it. I was in Long Island with my family, and we were out on like my in-laws' front yard hanging out. And a call comes in the next day from L.A. And, you know, he's like, "Yo, what's up?" I'm like, "Well, I don't know. You were trying to figure out what's going on." He's like, "Look, LeBron, D Wade, and Chris Bosh, you know, they think that they got it going on down there. They're trying to load up and win championships." And he said, "Anybody who can clothesline me in a playoff game, I need them on my team." He was like, "They think they got something, but we're gonna load up too." And he pitched it just like that. And I was like, "Okay, well, you know, we gotta see what the numbers are," because at that point, Doug, you know, money was being spent. It wasn't being spent on me necessarily. So I was going to probably, I thought, have to wait in free agency to see who had money left and just, you know, I'm trying to make a living out of this, right? I didn't have the luxury of just saying, "Yeah, I'm going to play purely for the money." So,
right.
You know, or just for the championship. So a few weeks go by and I'm out. I go out to the ESPYs. I'm going to meet with Kobe. And he's like, "Yo, dude, I'm going to send the Mamba Chopper." I'm like, "What the fuck are you talking about?" He's like, "Yeah, I don't drive. He's like, "I'm going to send the Mamba Chopper. It's going to pick you up. It's going to bring you out to the house. And we'll chop it up and we'll get it figured out." And I'll be damned, dude, if that day I don't get a call from Chicago and fucking the Jazz, both with two different offers, both for around $10 million, and the Lakers were just strapped. They just didn't have anything left. And I called him and I was like, "Yo, dude, I hate to do this shit to you. I was like, but I mean, look, these numbers aren't even comparable. I'd never make this money again in my life, bro. Like, I ain't gonna waste your gas on the chopper, you know, and put it to bed like that." And he was cool about it, but yeah. I always regret, I mean, not sitting here like, you know, paying mortgages, I don't regret it, but I regret never playing with him because that legendary, like, work ethic that he had, that "I will outwork anyone in the gym," is something that, especially in my younger days, I prided myself on, and I would have loved to have seen if I could live up to that shit. Like, you know, I was good enough to, like, earn a little bit of respect from him playing against him. I would have liked to have known if I could earn his respect playing with him, just to match whatever he was doing physically, and I never got a chance to do that.
Where were you when you found out he had the crash?
I was in a car, driving from a quarterfinal game with my seventh-grade basketball team. Going to our semifinal game, and one of the kids in the back said, "I just saw Kobe died in a helicopter crash." And I was like, "Dude, cut it out, man." I was like, "That's not even funny." I was like, "You guys in this, like, all your internet," I was like, "It's like, didn't they say like Lil Yachty or somebody died last week? Like, cut it out." And I had a dad sitting next to me in the front seat, and I kept driving, and another one of them in the back was like, "I just saw it too." So I'm like, "Oh, fuck." I look over at the dad, and I'm like, "Hey, man, check ESPN real quick. Just check a major, like, verified," and it hadn't hit yet. And so I called Steve, and I was like, "Nash, are you, you know, what's up, dude? Are you in L.A.?" And he was like, "Yeah." I was like, "Yo, is this shit true?" And I don't know that he heard what I said, because his response immediately wasn't like, it's true. He said, you know, something, and the kids are all in the car. And at the end, I'm like, okay, brother, all right, cool. Are you good? And he was like, yeah, dude, I'm good. We're alive. And I was like, what the fuck? I was like, are you telling me that? So I just, I mean, I, you know, it hit home immediately for me because, I mean, once I got the details, I found out what he was doing that day. I was doing the same thing. It was just,
right.
My mother, I've never seen this, someone not in our family, she cried like she lost a child. And I don't really, to this day, I don't know why. It affected her like that. She cried when I got out of the car, and she was parked right next to me, and I looked at her, and she knew something was wrong. I was like, she said, what happened? I said, Kobe, they're saying Kobe just died in a helicopter crash. She broke down and cried like she had lost a child. It was the weirdest thing. But then I watched over the next few days, obviously, the world, it had that effect on them. And it, admittedly, it didn't have that effect on me that day. It didn't. Like, it was shitty. I felt terrible. I felt awful for the families as the news started to pour out. But it didn't hit me. And I don't know if I'm supposed to feel guilty for that or not, but it didn't hit me. The next day when I went to work and it started to sink in and I had to start talking about it, yeah. It sucked all the life out of me.
It's amazing because, so my daughter, and if you're listening to this pod, you probably heard last week's, I called a game the night before on radio, Kentucky, Texas Tech. And I'm really close with the Texas Tech guys. And I like spent the next like 5 hours breaking down tape with them, which is just awesome. Chris Beard's an incredible dude. And I flew back. I was supposed to come to Miami on Sunday, and I like could have had like a day at the beach and no kids and nothing and just, you know, I mean, great.
Yeah.
But my son, we had our sixth grade had two teams, and he's like a little young fifth grader. But we had two sixth grade games, and my daughter had, and he had a baseball game, and my daughter had she had a riding show. And so I hadn't seen her ride in a couple months. So I was like, I'm going to come. So I literally, you know, fly in, and it's foggy, and we land, get to my car, drive down, pick up my other daughter. We go down to see her show, and those things are always late. And she's showing, and she's doing well, and it popped up on my phone. My mom's sitting next to me, my wife, and we're like, no way, no way, right?
Right.
And then we're looking further, and, you know, I not only knew Kobe, but my daughters had gone to school with Gigi, and Gianna actually asked Harper, hey, why don't you play basketball? This is like 2 years ago when we first moved back from Connecticut. She's like, you know, you should play basketball with us, you know, on the school team and then on Mamba. And Harper's like, I'm terrible. She was okay, but she's like, your dad play. Why don't you play? She's like, I don't want. Anyway, and the reason Harper didn't want to play was she wants to ride. And what they did with Mamba was they weren't very good at first, and they stopped playing tournaments and practiced 5-6 days a week. It was like, it was good. It was hardcore. He really taught him how to play basketball. Anyway, so she gets done. She wins the show, and she's like on her horse, and she's bawling. And so I was like, oh, I mean, Gianna wasn't on it. I don't know. So I tell my wife and my mom, I'll go figure it out. So she's going, and she's on her horse, and she's walking back towards the stall or whatever. And I was like, what's wrong? You did great. She's like, Dad, my friend died in a helicopter accident. I was like, no, Harper, Gianna wasn't on. She's like, not Gianna, Alyssa. I was like, Alyssa? She's like, Alyssa Altabelli. She's like, I hang out with her every day for the last 2 years before school and at lunch. She's on Mamba. She's like, and Ellie's on that team. And I don't know if Ellie was on the chopper too. And I was like, what? And so like we found out. So anyway, then we come home, and one of the other girls at the barn is best friends with their older daughter, with Altabelli's older daughter, who now has no parents and loses a sister. So we got to arrange to get the car home. We get the car home, and now I got to go coach these AAU games. So, and my son's out in front, you know, he's got a Kobe jersey on. He's shooting tribute videos to him, you know. Anyway, I go and I coach these games, and we lose hard, but it was actually good basketball, and everybody is like in a weird place. All the kids are wearing purple and gold, and the parents are wearing Kobe stuff or whatever, but it was just still too raw. And then I come home, my daughter, the parallel was I left that night, and I'm like you, like I was more concerned about my daughter because we had like a long talk about death and dying and what you believe happens next and how you should remember your friend and how you should handle things. And, you know, and then I had to like fly across the country and, you know, work's like, hey, we'd like to have you on like first thing in the morning. So I got to catch an earlier red eye. But I remember like closing my eyes in the red eye and I felt terrible, but it was more for my daughter. And I had a friend named Don Clark who died suddenly. He was a 6'6" kid. I was like 12 and he was 13. I'd grown up playing ball with him and he like dropped dead one day after practice. And I told her the story that I remember when Don Clark died and how he died at the end of practice. And I used to get scared at the end of basketball games that I was going to drop dead. And I was like,
right,
you know, and the way in which my brain works now, I have friends that died in a plane crash. Now I know these people that died in a helicopter accident. I almost feel like the statistical likelihood of that happening to me is so minuscule. You know, there's some survivor's guilt there, but I know it won't happen. Anyway, it wasn't until probably, the next day I was on energy and adrenaline and I'd flown and I was tired, but I've gotten sadder and sadder and sadder. And when I saw that ceremony Friday night, like I was just bawling and I've been incredibly sad. And I think part of it is that it took me a while to like him, right? But it also took him like reaching out. Part of it was, you know, like you see somebody's life, basically his life was lived in the public eye since he was 17. So we saw him mature and then make mistakes and then fall out of favor and then earn back people's respect until this like incredible, like unbelievable end to his career. And then there's the element that you and I share, which is we coach kids' team. We're in these cars with these kids all the time. And it might have been a helicopter for him, but it could have been a 15-passenger van or it could have been your SUV or whatever. Like this shit can happen at any time, right? And just the relationships you have with your son or your daughter when you're coaching them, like those moments are so real and so important. I don't know, like the whole thing. Yeah, I'm with you. Like my dad died and it really affected me. I didn't cry, I don't know, as much as when Kobe died. Like this thing has really put like a pail on me.
Yeah, dude. Your daughter is the reason why I'm so sad. Like the young people that are affected by the amount of loss in that helicopter, right? Like Kobe. This isn't to marginalize Kobe's loss, but just the amount of families is ultimately, you know, what got to me. I'll get back to Kobe. It's just, you know, man, like that's my world, dude. Like it's why, you know, it's why you do what you do. It's why you don't do some things. It's why, you know, it's your world. And to casually leave every day and take for granted that you're going to see them again because you just do all the time. It just put a perspective on it where you're like, man, like you're really taking a lot of shit for granted. Like you don't know what's happening the next minute of your life, you know? And we're guilty of that. Our family, most of the families that we're friends with, like my good friends that are in other states are all living the same life where you're like, I got to go. No, I got to get Zen over to this game, and you got to take Ty there, or I'll drop you off. I love you. See you later. Like, guys, have good games. We'll see you in a bit. And you just don't know. And so the amount of loss on that chopper, like, for those families, for your daughter and all the people that were close to all of them was just, dude, it consumed me, man. That next day, even after work, I was really, really down. I'm with you, dude, all the way. My kids, who are not nearly as close to the situation, obviously, as yours, were – you know, their granddad died 2 years ago. So, you know, it took them back to that shit. Like they were, my 12-year-old turned 13. I come home and he's crying in his bedroom. And I'm like, what are you crying about, buddy? And he's like, well, you know, I should have been there when Papa died. And, you know, I'd like just, you know, it took them back to a really, really dark place. It had that kind of effect on a lot of people. And to Kobe, I always thought that his life, because I had a dude that worked for the Sixers whose brother was friends with him back in high school, and he always told me, you know, Kobe didn't have a lot of people. He had a small circle because of who he was, right? And you know, I'd say this about any like child star: it's got to be kind of lonely, right? It's got to be kind of hard for you to really sift through whether someone likes you for you, or whether someone likes you because you're Kobe or you're Michael Jackson or you're, you know, any Macaulay Culkin, any star like that. Like, it's got to be a very hard thing, you know, to figure out and trust. And so for that reason, it's got to be kind of lonely. And then, you know, you're this uber competitor and, you know, you knock heads with everyone and you're beating them all. And then, you know, you don't want any friends. And then to see him really get comfortable in his own skin, and it could, doesn't matter whether it was post-retirement or not, but him opening up, him even just like the Mamba Academy and having the workouts with all the guys out there in L.A. and starting to impart, you know, some of the tricks of the trade and that wisdom, you know, onto those guys. Here, let me give you some keys to the kingdom. Take, like, this is what I would do in this scenario, or challenging those guys, you know, on Instagram, really opening up and being the type of family dude that he was. Like, it was just, you know, it was really, really hard pill to swallow, because to some degree you felt like he was just hitting his fucking prime. Like,
yes, no, he finally figured it out. Like, I finally figured out life.
Yeah, it
makes the story even more complex, and you know, it's like it's one of those deals where I said this on television. It's true. It's like, look, if you want to stop after Colorado, you can. If you want to stop after, you know, when he playing against you guys in the Suns and he refused to shoot the ball, he did it again against the Thunder, right, where he was throwing a fit, yep, because he didn't like his teammates or whatever. You know, if you want to, like, those are just chapters in the story, but the thing isn't, the book continues to be written. There was this, obviously, a surprise and shocking ending, but all of a sudden the story became a beautiful one where the guy figured it out. And I think that's, yep, what we can all, one, relate to. I also think it's funny you point that out about, are you friends with me because I'm Kobe? Are you friends with me because you want to be friends with me? Like, honestly, that's why I never asked him to be on the pod. Like, he's like, dude, why haven't you asked me to be on your pod? I was like, I actually kind of think we're friends, and I don't know. I just didn't, yeah, want to be the guy who used you so I could get 10,000 more downloads. Like, I don't want to be that guy.
You and I aren't fucking friends.
No, but you're not going to get me 10,000 more downloads. We're catching up. We haven't caught up in forever. People forget I discovered you back in the day. And now you're a multimedia star. So, and I think, and maybe this is a little bit. So now my daughter is going through the people have moved on, right? There's still flowers in front of the school and the memorial, right, is Monday, and people will remember, and they're doing these great stories about Alyssa's dad. And as a junior college baseball coach down the street. But now it's like, hey, why aren't people remembering my friend? And the numbers are still up and the ribbons are still up, but, you know, people move on.
Right.
And I think for you, there's got to be a little of, like, I made it myself, but you could clothesline anybody in the NBA, but you didn't. You clothesline Kobe Bryant, and it kind of made you a little bit, right? You became a made man because of it, because you stared down the belly of the beast. And one, and so there's got to be a little bit of that.
I said it to my dad the other day. Like, I said, you know, when I was really kind of unloading and stuff, and, you know, I said, Dad, look, I mean, I would have still lived a dream, like, but no one would have ever known who I was if that didn't happen. Like, so, you know, like, it's just a weird thing, right? Like, no one would have ever known. Like, they would have been like, yeah, he could shoot a little bit and, you know, whatever. But because of that, like, I had a couple minutes of like national attention. So I'm very cognizant of that. I'm not really, it's not like a thankful thing. I'm cognizant of the fact. And, you know, you grow up, like, Doug, when you grow up, like, being a basketball player, like, it is a dream. It is beyond, like, your wildest dream to be able to do that for most of us, right? Some are born to do it. Some are dreaming to do it. Like, if you had told me, hey, man, one day you are going to be friends with someone like Michael Jordan, I'd be like, the fuck at it. What are you talking about? Like, stop. Like, to be able to say that, like, I did have moments against Kobe where we really competed and we both laid it all out there on the line, and he respected me enough to, like, call me a friend and vice versa. Like, that's really, like, it, In some ways, it is as I feel as accomplished as I do for having played in the NBA, if that makes sense. Do you know what I mean? That's it. You get the respect of MJ. That's it. You've done what you need to do. And I just feel that. I can't help but feel that way sometimes.
He always went right, didn't he? Did he go left?
He went left to get into a shot, right? Go right, come back left to get into a shot, go left to get into a pull-up. Most of the attacking was done to the right. And I had a lot of I played him so much and watched so much. I had quick hands. It was one of the things that I've always had. And so, when he get into that, little shoulder shimmy and give you the little fadeaway, I got hands on a lot of that. A lot is relative, but I get hands on it a bit. And I just remember him being like, oh, fuck, I forgot how quick your hands were. And then coming back, the next year and being like, yeah, dude, but it's not going to be there anymore. And then it wouldn't be there anymore. He'd had moved it. So, the place where he originated the shot was different. So where I put my hand had to change now, too, because he had just countered what I had been doing to him for a year, you know? And it was a chess match like that. He was always, going to be one step ahead of what you were trying to do, or trying to be one step ahead of what you were trying to do, you know?
Mm-hmm. No, he was really a brilliant guy, and he really put a lot of, I think Jordan was brilliant as a basketball player, and he's obviously, like Kobe, been a brilliant businessman, but I don't think, and this may be, you played against him, so you tell me, I always saw Jordan early on, maybe in his prime, was a little bit better athlete. Don't get me wrong, Kobe was a great athlete, but in NBA terms, Jordan was a freak. You could not keep him out of the lane, and I can't imagine without hand checking. And Jordan finished on anybody. Kobe was just a notch below, but Kobe's ability to understand everything, angles, pivoting, use of your hands, your quickness of your hands, and how to change things, his overall IQ and basketball IQ was spectacular. And there is the conflict there, because as smart a basketball player as he was also could be super, super selfish, right? And take bad shots and force things and get, and like you said, when you get goaded into kind of the rivalry of, hey, I'm going to fuck you up, and good, that's what we want you to do. We want you to shoot the ball 40 times and not pass the ball, because that gives us a better chance to win. So there was a lot to him that's different, and that's how I think the story should be told. We get caught up in media, I think, sometimes in platitudes and in talking about big moments, where you having guarded him and me having watched it and our, and like a podcast like this, the ability to break down, this is what really kind of separated him and made him different.
Dude, I agree with you. I think at the end of the day, Kobe, was a human being, right? And we all have our brilliant moments. We all have our not so brilliant moments. We all do dumb shit. To the point, about the chapters keep rolling on, my kids asked me the other day, as they get more information about Kobe, about Colorado, right? And I had to just frankly tell them, look, this is what happened. Share that with them, but say, everybody will make mistakes. There are degrees of that. Granted, everybody is going to do, but it's, can you grow? Can you learn? Can you keep it moving from that? Can you continue to evolve, as a little person, as it pertained to them? Does that define who you are, or do you try to become better from it? And let's not get caught up on that. We have to admit and take that into account when you're talking about someone. It wouldn't be fair not to. But do you continue to try to evolve? And that's kind of through all of this, Doug. Because I do coach a high school team now, and I coach a seventh grade team and a fifth grade team, and I'm with my boys, and my little girl's too young, she's three. But when you talk about Mamba mentality, I'm like, look, guys, the best way you can honor him, he's not writing anything on your shoes and Sharpie or anything like that. That's not the way you do it. The way you do it is to my son's been reading his book. He's got it, and he was doing that before the tragedy. But it's to apply some of the mindsets that he had to your daily, whatever it is that you love to do. Like, attack it with a passion and a thirst to be like great at it. Like, don't ever think that that enough is enough. Always try to like evolve and be better at what you're doing. Just whether it be playing the cello or the piano or dancing, whatever it is that you love and you have a passion for, first and foremost, find it. Whatever it is, like the kids, I sent you videos the other day, and you sent me videos. Like, I don't know what my sons love yet. Find that. Like, find something that just makes you like want to get up in the morning and do it. Something that just like will get you out of bed when you don't think you want to be out of bed. Like, and when you find that, pour yourself into it, and see if you're rewarded for that. See how far it can take you. Like, those are the things that, like, more than anything, I think I want my kids, the kids that I work with, to understand about Kobe. Like, yeah, fuck, he won a lot of championships. He was a great player, you know, flawed individual, sure, but found himself and is a great dad by all accounts and all of that. Like, but the mindset, like, that mentality, the true Mamba mentality, like, take that shit and apply it to your life. If you can do that, you would have honored that man in a way that I don't even know that he could have appreciated the impact of, you know? And so that's where I'm at with it, Doug. Like, super fucking sad. Like, you know, but to your point about the world moving on, like, the clock keeps ticking. And I told my son this shit 3 days ago, man. Unfortunately, and it doesn't seem fair, the world doesn't stop. And so the challenge in times like that, when you're really sad and you're all broken up, is to find a way to keep getting up out of bed and keep putting the foot forward and keep doing what you're doing. Right? And when you're doing that, apply these lessons to that. Like, find the passion, live the passion, like, work for it. Don't ever be satisfied. Try to be the best. Like, and that should take you really far, man. It'll take you really far in life.
I saw this quote. I tweeted a while back, and I've used it a bunch. I love it, and I'll tell you why in a second. I have self-doubt. I have insecurity. I fear failure. I have nights when I show up at the arena, and I'm like, my back hurts, my feet hurt, my knees hurt. I don't have it. I just want to chill. We all have self-doubt. You don't deny it, but you also don't capitulate to it. You embrace it. That's from Kobe. And it's fantastic on so many levels. I had this discussion. I have twin daughters. The other, I can't say other daughter. Her Harper is, you know, straight A student, and she's a great rider, and she knows what she wants. Every day she wants to be on a horse, and she wants to be great at that. And the limitations are really financial, right? I mean, in that sport. Her sister Grace, you know, she gets rife with jealousy. And what I've tried to explain to her is, like, it's okay to be jealous. It's okay to be insecure. It's, do you let that eat you up, or do you let that energize you and use that jealousy and insecurity to make you every day become better? And that's really the decision that you have to make. And I agree. And if that's the Mamba mentality, like, yeah, I think that's the true story here is the story of this is the do you know the Evolution of Man poster?
Yeah.
Okay. You know where it starts out, like, Cro-Magnon hunched over, and then it shows like Evolution of Man at the end. It's Homo erectus, which is what we are now, standing up straight. Like, I think that's all of us. I think that's Kobe Bryant in a nutshell, but that's all of us. Like, we're all in, we think of human evolution taking millions of years. Like, nah, it's really your lifespan. You know, you start out and you think you know everything because you're 14 and you got some hair in your chest, you know, and you can make a basket. And a girl likes you, and, you know, you evolve, and he evolved. And that video on his tribute night at the end, here he is in a beautiful suit, in a perfect tie. But it's not, there's no jewelry there. There's no glam there. You know, there's no lines in the side of his head. It's just a perfect, you know, perfectly coiffed, shaved head, and, you know, a slightly overgrown beard. He's just, He had grown into a man, into an evolved adult, and he had used I'm sure his own insecurities, his own self-doubt, his fear of failure to energize him, to get him up out of bed. And that's my takeaway as well, which is, you know, like, I didn't make the league like you do. like you did. And I continue to kick to myself because I didn't believe in myself as a shooter, or I'd get to a place where I'd stop working in the middle of a season, or I just wouldn't take an opportunity. And it fucks with me. But then I think of, you know, why did I take the earlier red eye to be on TV all day and then be on radio and then do all the shit I did? Because, you know, you want to call it mama mentality, just the idea of I have insecurities that I left something on the table as a basketball player that I will never leave on the table as a broadcaster. And
yep.
That's what I'm trying to implore with my kids as well. Exact same lessons that you are with yours.
Yeah, I think it's a great lesson, Holmes. And that's what it's got to be, bro. I mean, that's what it's got to be for them, man. Like, they didn't, you know, unfortunately, my kids didn't really get to know him or meet him or anything like that. But that's what our house will talk about when we talk about Mamba. We won't, you know, it won't be about the points and all of that. It'll be about how are you going to approach the things in your life that you want to do, or, and even more importantly, to your point, that you're afraid you might not be able to do. Like, what are you going to do? You going to stop? You going to shut it down? We had one of those last night in the bed with my 13-year-old or 12-year-old. You know, he got in the bed with my wife and I late, and he had overcome, like, a 7-on-7 situation. He was playing up a couple years and felt really inferior and wouldn't do it. And this happened a week ago. So this was Kobe was used in this conversation. Like, Dia, you got to go back, dog. Like, it didn't feel great, but you're young. Like, you're there to learn. Like, it's going to be good for you in the long run. You got to go. And you got to get over the feeling of being uncomfortable. If you're not uncomfortable, you don't grow. Like, you got to grow. You got to grow, bud. And so I sent his ass back yesterday. Like, he didn't want to go. And when he got home, he was so fucking proud of himself because he had a great night. I got like 3 phone calls, and I said to him, laying in the bed, I said, "Dude, I'm proud of you, man." I was like, "This is a life lesson for you. This is a hurdle that everyone, you know, hopefully can overcome. They certainly will have them." And it's just what you do in that moment when you're facing fear, like that defines you as a person, man. And I really do believe, Doug, that if anyone out there wants to take something away from this shit, take that away from it, bro. That this cat was willing to look anything that can. How the fuck do you become an Oscar-winning like director, Doug? Like, think about that shit, man. Like, you're looking at any obstacle and saying, "I got this. I can do it." That's pretty cool.
It's unbelievable. It's really unbelievable. Listen, man, it was awesome to catch up. Next time I'm down there or you're out here, you let me know. We will break bread. In the meantime, you've been incredibly gracious with your time. That was fun. Let's do it again.
Anytime, bro. Hey, tell your wife and the kids. I know I haven't seen them in years, but tell them all I said hi.
I'll do it. Thanks, Ra.
All right, bro. Later.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
All right, thanks so much for listening, guys. I really appreciate it. Obviously, I have so many of you text me that are my friends, or you tweet me and you're like, "Man, that was really good," or you, however you want to communicate with your friends, this is good stuff. And some of it is, you know, our back and forth, my friendship with Raja, and some of it is just he's awesome and interesting and has led so far a very amazing life in our discussion about his life and Kobe Bryant. So I hope you enjoyed it. I know we broke it into two. Some people like that. Some people don't. If you don't, tell me. If you do, tell me. It's always going to end up in your queue anyway. So when the next one comes up, you put it on, you listen to it. That's what I do with podcasts. And I hope you do as well. A reminder, the Doug Gottlieb Show is on daily, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific. It's timely. We react on the fly. We don't write anything out. We just react to the news of the day and give you our takes and have some of the best guests, if not the best guests in America. Remember, that's Doug Gottlieb Show. That's, you know, we have our podcast as well as the radio show. In the meantime, don't forget to subscribe, download, and rate the show. When you rate the show, I think it helps me. Gets me more I don't know. Who knows? I don't know actually how this works. I just speak into the microphone. Somebody else does all the interesting stuff. Thank you to Raja Bell. Thank you for downloading. I'm Doug Gottlieb, and this is All Ball.